The Tech Industry Alliance, which, if you're not familiar with, is the merger of Kerry SciTech and IT at Cork, is hosting an event next week. It's their second Diversity Matters mini conference, and it's on Wednesday, November 29th at the Cork International Hotel, and the theme is Moving Beyond Tokenism. The keynote speaker at this event is Sharon McCarthy, the founder of Autism Journeys, and her talk is entitled Lip Service, Is It Really a Thing of the Past? Moving from a Space of Awareness to One of Equity. Well, joining us now to talk about that, about all things neurodivergent in the workplace and beyond, I'm joined by Sharon McCarthy. Sharon, good evening. You're very welcome to the programme.
Hi, Mary. Thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. Look, you are the keynote speaker at the Tech Industry Alliance Diversity Matters mini conference, which is taking place next Wednesday at the Cork International Hotel. And your talk is entitled Lip Service, Is It Really a Thing of the Past? Moving from a Space of Awareness to One of Equity. Now, we're going to get into that in more detail in a minute. But maybe First of all, you might tell us about yourself. You're the founder of Autism Journeys. What exactly do you do and how did all of that come about?
Absolutely. I'm the founding director of Autism Journeys Training and Consultancy Service. First and foremost, it's a service that provides different trainings to different governmental, individual schools, businesses around the country. We provide things called environmental assessment and modification programs and so on, where we'll go in and we'll check out a space and make sure that it is best set up to meet the needs of autistic and otherwise neurodivergent people. I do a little bit of lecturing in UCD and in the Cork College of FET. We'd also provide advocacy services. We'd provide pre and post diagnostic services and so on. How it came about, actually, essentially, is that I am first and foremost a mama. I'm a parent to multiply identified autistic and otherwise neurodivergent kiddos. I have been for the last 26 years. And in our house every day, we navigate autism, dyslexia, dyspraxia, ADHD, mental well-being challenge, sensory processing disorder, and so on and so forth. This came about because when I first was thrown into that kind of parenting autistic kiddos arena, there was very, very little support, service, strategizing, information available, actually. Because of that, I felt a little bit at sea. And it was very, very discombobulating, very disempowering as a mom not to be able to step up and to show up for my kids every day. I decided that I'd go back to college and that I'd upskill and I'd start studying and so on and so forth so that I could actually best meet my children's needs. As I navigated that back to education career, it became more and more and more apparent that I wasn't the only parent, I suppose, that people required support and help in all walks of life. Initially, I worked very much in a voluntary capacity. And about 6 years ago, it became so, so busy that there was no way that I could just contribute some of my time anymore. I had to step into it full time. And that's what I did. And I suppose that's where I came from. The beauty in Autism Journeys, actually, is that it's absolutely situated in that lived experience as a parent, but also I was identified myself as an autistic person in more recent times, which is oftentimes the case for many parents of autistic kiddos, because we're very much situated in that lived experience here. We're definitely very well positioned then to support people in navigating their own kind of autism journey, but also in empowering people with the knowledge that they are the absolute expert in their or in their little person's experiences as well, that they're the person best positioned to ensure that their little person is set up for success, or that they're the person best positioned to advocate and to create those conversations and make space for autistic people, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm. And your talk at this upcoming Diversity Matters mini conference is centering on equity for people who are neurodivergent. And that's a term, I suppose, that's being used a lot more and kind of an umbrella for a lot of different kinds of conditions. Society has changed a lot over the years, and you're going to know that more than anyone else, I suppose, in your situation. There's more of an understanding and more of an acceptance of people being neurodivergent. And, you know, we've a lot of different events and weeks. You know, there's Neurodiversity Celebration Week, Autism Acceptance Week. Do you think these kind of things are beneficial in changing attitudes?
Absolutely. When I think about the whole conversation, those kind of sensory hours every week that are rolled out in local supermarkets, those kind of autism awareness months, weeks, days, they're great insofar as they create conversation. They start the ball rolling and they push the terms like autism or ADHD or dyspraxia or dyslexia, for example. They put them in the main they create that conversation in mainstream conversation. So it's definitely good that it's happening. I suppose the problem with it is that there's not enough of it happening. When I think about creating awareness, so right now we're stuck in a space where people are talking about awareness, absolutely, awareness and acceptance. When we think about awareness, these kind of autism awareness in inverted comma days or months, they are absolutely putting the words out there. But there's a big, big jump needed from awareness to acceptance. And a further big jump needed for society to move from acceptance to that kind of equity space. Right now, we kind of dance that dance between awareness and acceptance. Some people know the word, they hear the word, they're okay with the word, they kind of understand these kind of different words, neurodivergent, neurodiversity, autism, ADHD, etc. Some people know those words. Some people absolutely are very accepting of people who are considered neurodivergent in some way, shape, or form. However, there's still very little move from there to that equity, to that space of justice where everybody's needs are met and everybody is accepted as they are for who they are and without any kind of question or judgment. So I suppose definitely we're moving in the right direction. Without jumping on my soapbox, I think it's really, really, really important that while we recognize that we're moving in the right direction, we need to continue to move. And we also need to start moving a little bit faster. When I was a very little person, autistic people were considered to be one in every 10,000. The stats more recently, depending upon where you're looking at it, whether you look at the CDC or whether you look at the WHO stats and so on, it's anywhere between one in 65 and one in 44. I know that I've got a colleague who's currently working on a bit of research around the census that was presented back in 2016 in Cork specifically, and actually information in that indicates that approximately one in 31 or one in 32 people are autistic. So I suppose the number of people being identified as autistic is ever growing. And I suppose, and yet we have young people who are navigating mental well-being challenge, adults as well, obviously. But I suppose navigating mental well-being challenges, navigating trauma, navigating real difficulty in kind of stepping into who they are, accessing education, accessing work placements, accessing employment, short or full-time, like part or full-time, short-term or long-term. And I suppose one of the ways that we can ensure that people do start to gain full-time and long-term employment, to access full educational programs rather than part and needing to drop out or needing like feeling under so much pressure that they begin to avoid school and so on, is to move from that acceptance, that awareness and acceptance space to one of equity and one of justice.
Yeah, I think you touched on it there. You know, the likes of supermarkets, a lot of them have, say, maybe autism awareness or autism evenings or autism friendly evenings where maybe lights and music and things like that are dulled. I think your point that you're trying to make is while this is good and this is, you know, helping to change attitudes, that it shouldn't just be, you know, one occasion, maybe once a week, it should be the norm. Is that what you're trying to say?
Definitely
Yeah,
not.
yeah.
The reality is that every person benefits from a supermarket that is quiet, for example. Every person benefits from not having these loud announcements come out over tannoys. Think about the frazzled mom to young kiddos. Think about the older person who is kind of slow on their feet and who needs to be able to get into to have the opportunity to connect with the servers behind, but who is subjected to that real loud, that real overwhelming kind of sensory experience all the time. The reality is that it absolutely is beneficial, but for a space to be truly equitable and for a space to be truly accepting of autistic and otherwise neurodivergent experience, it isn't like people aren't autistic for 1 hour in the week. People aren't ADHDers for 1 hour in the week. People don't experience sensory difficulties for just 1 hour in the week. When we think about like our colleagues who are wheelchair users, for example, it wouldn't be considered acceptable to provide somebody with a ramp for 1 hour in the week to have a door frame that is a minimum of 1,000 millimeters wide for 1 hour in the week. When we think about kind of ensuring that autistic people are are accepted, fully accepted members of society, we start to think about creating accessibility wholeheartedly and holistically rather than tokenistically. And I suppose it's really important that that these kinds of 1 hour sensory spaces are happening, absolutely. And I have no doubt that the motivation behind supermarket chains and so on at rolling these out isn't tokenistic, that they are absolutely trying to elicit change and trying to create kind of a greater space of accessibility for their users who might navigate sensory difficulties. I suppose the way to step away from that idea of tokenism, though, then is to start to consider how we change how we change spaces completely, how we make sure that that we're meeting the needs of our consumers or the needs of our students or the needs of whomever all of the time, not just for that very short period during the day.
Yeah, so you'd be kind of saying that businesses or maybe government departments, education services, that they should all be looking at policies, whether it is for customers or for employees, or for students, to make it, I suppose, inclusive on a whole time basis, not just sometimes.
No, absolutely. Whole time basis. So I suppose when you think about poly, like, so I suppose when you think about accessible toilets, for example, thinking about accessible toilets, people talk about, oh, they're great. You've got all these lovely signs now saying not every disability is visible and so on and so forth. And that's meant to create accessibility for autistic people. But I know, I'm certain actually, because I've experienced it in different counties around the country, that many places, while they have this sign up, they expect a person to go and to request the key to unlock the accessible toilet to be able to use it. So you're immediately creating that kind of necessity for people who are potentially not okay with disclosing that they have an invisible disability. There's an immediate demand being placed upon them to disclose if they want to keep themselves sensorily safe, for example. So I suppose even in that, like even when you think about that example, there shouldn't be there like there's an immediate barrier to accessing an accessible toilet in many spaces. When you think about policies, I know that there's one example that comes to mind immediately for me, and that is one like a policy that we were working on in the not too distant past, looking at bullying policies within within a department. And the reality is that as we broke it down, the language is hugely complex. There was a question, like it was assumed that the autistic staff members would be able to access this without any difficulty. But actually, when we started breaking it down, it was full of inference-based language. No concrete language. No very clear chronological steps to ensure that somebody could access different pathways if they needed to. Things were kind of very haphazardly thrown in. And while they looked, I suppose, to a non so to a neurotypical or a person who is of the main kind of brain type, so to speak, while it looked like it would be very, very clearly and easily accessible to somebody with of the majority, there was so many different areas that needed to be changed in order to ensure that it was accessible for the autistic or the ADHD brain, for example. And when you think about those policies are great. They're great for kind of telling us what to do and where to go. They're very, like, when they're written well, they make things very, very easy to kind of follow. They make sure that there's very clear boundaries in place and so on. But I suppose it's really, really important that even when we're thinking about policies, that actually that they're written by people who actually understand the nuances and who are very aware of what an autistic person might need, for example, in order to access those policies. The reality is that the majority of those documents are oftentimes completely inaccessible. And I suppose even in the context of all of that then as well, when I'm thinking about work, when I'm thinking about creating change, when I'm thinking about policies, well, like before we even begin, people are meant to, like people are onboarded. And even the onboarding process is completely inaccessible. So I suppose there are so many things people to, like, and companies and organizations speak to being accessible and inclusive and so on and so forth. But I suppose ultimately, when we think about inclusivity, when we think about accessibility, it is essential that we immediately think of the end user and that we have the end user contribute and impact and influence how any of these onboarding processes might look or how these policies might look, for example. It's really important that the autistic person's voice, that the ADHD person's voice, that the dyslexic or the dyspraxic person's voice is included, that the person who is navigating mental well-being, that their voice is included in all of these policies so that we can ensure that they're genuinely accessible, that they're genuinely inclusive rather than, again, tokenistically, as is oftentimes the case.
Absolutely. Sharon, we are going to have to leave it there. You are, as I mentioned at the start, the keynote speaker at next Wednesday's Tech Industry Alliance Diversity Matters mini conference at the Cork International Hotel. And people do need to book in advance. They can do so on Eventbrite. I'll share the link on the In Business Twitter account, but you can also search Tech Industry Alliance Eventbrite and you'll find the booking page. Sharon, just before we go, if there's any business listening here in Kerry, or indeed anyone who would like to contact you and you know, find out more about autism journeys, perhaps help their workplace become a better workplace, I suppose, or a better place for customers who maybe are neurodivergent. Where can they get more information? How can they contact you?
So they can find me on my website, www.autismjourneys.ie, or they can contact me directly via email on sharon@autismjourneys.ie.
Okay, Sharon, look, we're going to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks a million.